If you have your previous outline we've been using, we're going to cover the last two pages in that outline from, like I say, Deuteronomy 4, 44 through 6, chapter 6 and verse 9. The section we're going to begin with is called Gospel Glimpses. And it says, grace then exceeds then obedience. The history of Israel, as we go through here looking at all these things, the history of Israel reflects a profound truth about the gospel. Deuteronomy 5 and verse 6 reminds us that God saves Israel from the slavery in Egypt. He takes them to Mount Sinai to instruct them about how to obey his commands. This covenant relationship that Israel has with God is a two-way covenant. God provides the ways and the means to keep their relationship. All Israel has to do is follow his commands and live righteous lives. Even though they were disobedient, even though they were unfaithful, complainers, they still received the blessings of God. When we think about what God has done for us in the New Testament, in the New Covenant, it far exceeds what he's done for them. And we understand that it means so much more to us. And that's why, you know, in our study, we're studying Hebrews on Sunday, and we talked about we've received a greater covenant. In other words, we've got a greater blessing than what the children of Israel have, even in the fact in Christ Jesus. So let's not forget about that. The idea of God's grace is not really talked about that much in the Old Testament. We see more about it in the New Testament, but it was there as a part of what God was doing for them through his grace and through his mercy to them to keep them to do his bidding. In other words, he had a purpose for them, and he had that option, and he was doing all he could to help them fulfill that purpose. In chapter 4, let's look at that right quick. Chapter 4, verses 29 to 31. But from hence you shall seek Jehovah thy God, and thou shalt find him. When thou searchest after him with all thy heart, with all thy soul, when thou art in tribulation, and all these things are come upon thee, in the latter days thou shalt return to Jehovah thy God and hearken unto his voice. For Jehovah thy God is a merciful God, and he will not fail thee, neither destroy thee, nor forget the covenant of thy fathers which he swore unto them. So this is the reassurance of God's blessings to come to the children of Israel. Another thing which we talked about, Jesus is a better, the covenant that Jesus made with us is better than the covenant they had with the Moses covenant, so to speak. Jesus is a better mediator. We talked about that, and also in our study in Hebrews, being the mediator, he's greater than Moses. Moses was a mediator and chosen by God to be a leader of his people. Jesus was what? What did we emphasize that on Sunday? Or a couple of Sundays ago, anyway. What was his role? He's mediator, but what was his official title? Son of God. So much more than Moses could ever be. Jesus was the Son of God. So how much better a covenant do we have than what they had? Okay? But his role and Moses' role as mediator is so entwined in similar history to what Jesus is in the new covenant. Moses, like I say, as a servant, and Jesus as the Son of God. Let's look at, I think the verse we looked at in Hebrews. Let's look at Hebrews chapter 3 right quick. I think that's where it is. Well, in Hebrews 3, that's where he talks about all this. That, you know, telling them how much better they have it because of Jesus. Actually, chapter 8 and verse 6. Hebrews chapter 8 and verse 6. For now he hath obtained a ministry, the more excellent, by so much as he is also the mediator of a better covenant, which hath been acted upon better promises. He's talking about Jesus in that sense there in chapter 8 of Hebrews. So when we look at Moses, we go over into chapter 5, verses 4 and 5. It says, Jehovah spake with you face to face in the mount out of the midst of the fire. I stood between Jehovah and you at that time to show you the word of Jehovah. for you were afraid because of the fire, and went not up unto the mountain, saying, I am Jehovah thy God, who brought thee out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of bondage. So we see what we've talked about. Moses took them out of slavery. Jesus takes us out of the slavery of sin. Just there's so many similarities in that. We want to make sure that we understand that. Just as Moses imparted God's message with the giving of the Ten Commandments to him to give to Israel, Jesus imparts God's message to the world, and found in John chapter 1. I think we've read that before. John chapter 1, verses 1 through 10, talks about that, Jesus being the Word. So we need to get that connection as we look through these and see the most important benefits of it. Excuse me. What does Moses say they need to do here in the last part, or there in chapter 6? What does he say? You shall do what? Yeah. What's that? I'm sorry, I can't hear you. Okay. The idea is the fact that we're to serve God with all our heart, with all our soul, and all our mind. In other words, nothing else can stand in the way. Not today, we don't worship like statues that they did. Those people, they were going to conquer. That was what their whole life was surrounded about. And there were so many evil practices involved in their religious worship of these images and of the gods that they had established. So many years before, when they came out of Egypt, that's what the plagues were about. Their plagues were against the gods of the Egyptians. So God's trying to teach them here again that they need to make sure they avoid the idols and the idol worship. That's why he emphasizes in the first commandments that they should have no other gods before me. God first and foremost, always, with their heart, soul, mind, and strength. Look over in Joshua chapter 22. Joshua chapter 22. In verse 5. It says, only take diligent heed to do the commandment and the law which Moses, the servant of Jehovah, commanded you, to love Jehovah your God, and to walk in all his ways, and to keep his commandments, and to cleave unto him, and to serve him with all your heart and with all your soul. So Joshua blessed them and sent them away, and they went into their tents. So God's message, Moses' message, was that same thing. His message to Joshua, to the children of Israel, was basically the same thing. And not only here in Joshua, but it continues in 1 Kings and 2 Kings, 2 Chronicles. But Jesus also repeats it too. Matthew chapter 22. In Matthew chapter 22, in verse 17. So we all know that, you know, we're not talking about something new or foreign when Jesus asks us to do the same thing. Matthew chapter 22, in verse 17. Tell us therefore, thou thinkest thou, is it lawful to give tribute unto Caesar or not? But Jesus perceived their wickedness and says, why make you trial of me, you hypocrites? Show me the tribute money. And they brought him a denarius. And he said unto them, whose is the image? And the inscription, they said unto Caesar's. Then he said unto them, render therefore to Caesar the things that are Caesar's, and unto God the things that are God. So our rendering to God is more important than rendering to Caesar in that sense. So we need to make sure we understand that. Just a partial example of one. In Deuteronomy, and when Moses is giving this speech, he uses different terms. When he talks about, I guess I, you know, it might sound weird, talking about man's love for God. He uses terms like fear, but then he also uses terms like walk in God's ways, serve, hold fast, obey, keep his commandments and statutes. And he does that in several different verses. But when we look at that and think about it, what Jesus says in John 14 and 15 says, if you love me, keep my commandments. But isn't that what Moses is telling the children of Israel here too? If you love me, you'll keep my commandments. And you know, Moses even goes further and says, you keep my commandments and you teach them to your children and your children's children. You put them on the front of your door, the back of your door, on your hand, in front of you. You talk about them day and night, every day. So that people will know who you are, that you're God's people. All these things God is trying to show the world, and the world that the children of Israel were in now, and were in then, and the world that we're in now, is we are God's people. And we need to reflect that in our lives and the things that we do. To love God like he commands us to love him is to also love your neighbor. To love your friends and loved ones, but to love your neighbor, to be a part of it. When we talk about, you know, the law and the commandments, and it says, you know, love, you know, fear God and keep his commandments. That's in Ecclesiastes. Our love for family is only diminished by our love for God. We love our families. We need to love God more. That's one of the hardest things sometimes for us to do. Israel fails the test of love for God often and over again. But God's love never fails. It's steadfast. It's always there. The idea, you know, we talked about it in our reading here, that God says, you know, we had that covenant was established back with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And I renewed that covenant from Mount Sinai when you first came out of Egypt with your fathers. But because of disobedience, they died. They didn't get to come to the promised land. And so now he's telling them again, I'm making this covenant with you. It's not making it, but renewing it really is what is the better term for it. Renewing this covenant with you so that you know that I will continue to be the God that Israel needs me to be. His part will not change. He will never break his part of the covenant. But what happens? Who breaks the covenant? The children of Israel. As you study the history of the children of Israel, you'll see that time and time again. So the question, are we required to keep the law, the Ten Commandments, as part of the new covenant? Do they carry over? Yeah, in ways they do. In different ways they do. And Jesus repeats them several times. And the one that doesn't carry over was one that actually was not established. See, that's the irony of this. It was not established with the Ten Commandments. What was that one? It would have been the Sabbath day. When was that established? Genesis. When God rested. That became a hallowed day because of that. Before the Ten Commandments were ever given. But God used that in his foresight to get them to, when he gave them this commandment here, to remember the Sabbath day and keep it holy, because that, from his further instructions he was going to give them, it was going to be the day of the center around their worship in their temple and in their synagogue, and that sort of thing. It was where it's going to be centered around. But because we don't have that, what day is our worship and our service to God centered around? The first day of the week. We have that by example. We have that on the day the church was established in Acts chapter 2, on the day of Pentecost. So the similarities are there, but we don't have the Sabbath as a commandment. We have the first day of the week as an example, and whatever you want to do. But that's what he's talking about. Those are the things that we need to remember as we go through. We can think about some things too. I'm going to ask this question just in general, but if you want to have some specific examples, you can tell me. How much better do you know God just so far in our study of Deuteronomy? Has you got a better understanding of who God is and what kind of God he is? I hope you do. You know, God's love doesn't change. He's steadfast in his love for us, just like he was for the children of Israel. But he's never stopped demanding obedience. Even from the Garden of Eden, he demanded Adam and Eve to obey him. And with the result of what they did when they sinned and didn't obey him, there was punishment involved. The world today has a picture of God that says, oh, he'll never punish anybody. God's grace and mercy is going to exceed anything we can do. You know, we have no control over our destiny. Everybody's going to heaven. And, you know, that's just not true. The Bible does not support that theory. That's a good feeling, but the Bible does not support that. It never has, and it never will. So as we move on to our next lesson, hopefully you've got those questions ready. We'll take those here in just a minute. We're going to move into chapter 6, verse 10, and get over into on through here. We should be able to move through this pretty good in the next couple of weeks. This section is called it's called Test of Faith. And like I say, there's several things we need to look at in here, and we're going to examine those closely. I'm just going to read a couple of things here about this. Got to do that a little quicker than I thought. Let me see what my time is like. Sorry. I can't see the board back there. My eyes are having issues tonight. Okay. 20. Okay. I got some time. Moses, beginning in chapter 6 and verse 10. Chapter 6 and verse 10. I'm going to read through verse 15. And it shall be when Jehovah thy God shall bring thee unto thy fathers, to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob, to give thee great and goodly cities which thou buildest not, and houses full of all good things which thou fillest not, and cisterns hewn out which thou did not hew, nor vineyards and olive greens which thou did not plant, and thou shalt eat and be full. Beware lest you forget Jehovah, who brought thee forth out of the land of Egypt and out of the house of bondage. Thou shalt fear Jehovah thy God, and him shalt thou serve, and shalt swear by his name. You shall not go after other gods of the gods of the peoples that you are around about you. For Jehovah thy God in the midst of thee is a jealous God, lest the anger of Jehovah thy God be kindled against thee, and he destroyed thee from off the face of the earth. Now, you remember our history with Moses, when we were doing that scenarios there, going through the life of Moses when we first started this study. You remember the time when God got so mad at the children of Israel that he told Moses, I'm going to destroy every one of you, and I will build my people out of you from your descendants. He told Moses that. And you know, Moses could have said, yeah, I'm going to be the mighty one. I'm going to be greater than Abraham. I'm going to be greater than Isaac. I'm going to be greater than Jacob. Did he say that? What would somebody today say if God said, I'm going to make your descendants my people? In our day in society thinking, what would they say? Yeah, I can be famous. I can be big and powerful. I can control the world. Reminds me of Pinky and the Brain. I don't know if y'all ever watched that cartoon a long time ago. They're going to control the world. Anyway, it's really good. But the idea is the fact that Moses didn't do that, did he? Moses didn't do that. Moses says, God, remember what you promised. Remember what the influence you have gotten on the world already with what things you have done for these people. Remember what a great nation you made out of them. Remember what you have done by bringing them out of Egypt and destroying the Egyptians, probably the most high-powered society on earth at that time. You destroyed them. Of course, the children of Israel as slaves had made Egypt what it was, that strong and powerful nation. But he says Moses reminded him what he had done. And he reminded him too that the whole purpose in having the children of Israel and God leading them and showing to the world who God was through his power and might by the things he did for the children of Israel, he reminded him, you're going to lose that influence. The world's going to say, oh, well, that's not much of a God if he's just going to drop them like a hot potato because of some little old thing they did wrong. Moses reminded God of that. You know, if we talked about that unique relationship that Moses had with God. And we keep talking about, in our lessons on Hebrews, we see the comparison between Moses and Jesus as mediator, as, you know, different things. So when Moses was talking to God, do you think, you know, he didn't get angry with God, but he was just pointing out things that were going to lessen God in the sight of the world and in the sight of children of Israel. Because he reminded God that he was a steadfast God, that he was a loving God. And therefore, by doing something like that, would just destroy that image he's gotten, he's given to the world. So when we talk about Moses and these people, we're going to see that this lesson we just finished, talking about how we need to love the Lord our God with all our heart, soul, mind, and strength. It doesn't say it that way, but anyway, you get the idea. That because God loves us, how? With all his heart, soul, mind, and strength too. We need to reciprocate the love that God has for us to him, and then also to our neighbors. It's important for us not to forget that. And that's what he's telling the children of Israel here and now, as they've come to this point, and you know what God has done for them. In this, we call this section the test of faith, but it's just not going to be just a test of faith, because there's going to be a lot of temptations that await them in the promised land. They're going to be tempted in many different ways. They're going to be tests of love for the Lord. They're going to be tests of prosperity. They're going to test their He's going to test their forgetfulness. God's going to test them with idolatry, with covetousness. God's going to test them with pride and ingratitude. In every case, Israel's very identity as God's blessed people is at risk. You think about that. We're talking about the children of Israel now. But you bring that to us, to our lives today, to the world we live in today. And we're surrounded. The Lord's testing us with riches. We'll have to make all the money we can while here on this earth. God's testing us with forgetting who he was and what he's done for us. We can't forget that. We can't forget that gift that he gave to the whole world in his son. He's testing us with idolatry. Not with images so much as, oh, what is this? You know? Is that an idol in your life? Is that what your life's centered around? Sadly to say, it is. We've become so self-centered on our phones. You know, as I call it, you wonder what people do when they're, what they really do when they're not taking selfies. You know, you go out on Facebook and look, and you see selfies. 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 from one person all in one day. And you think, what kind of life are they living? You know, that they're also, basically what they're doing is worshiping themselves. That's what it comes down to. And then, you know, as I call it, it's great to celebrate things on Facebook with other people. It's great to celebrate birthdays and anniversaries. It's great to wish them well, congratulations on achievements that people make or their kids make or their grandkids make. We brag about our grandkids, you know, we got to do that. But the idea is the fact that we can't let anything like that become our all-comprehensive life. We got to be careful with that. And that's what he's telling, this is what he's telling the children of Israel. You're going to be compassed with things of idolatry. You're going to be compassed with covetousness. I want something that's not mine, so I take it. Which is covered under stealing also. But covetousness is also can be adultery. When someone covets another man's wife. And that's warned under the Ten Commandments too. We can also fall in love, as I call it, fall in love with ourselves and pride. Thinking, look what we accomplished, when it's actually God doing the accomplishing. Ingratitude, not being thankful enough. Can we ever be thankful enough? No, we can't. We can never be thankful enough. We cannot. But in each case, Israel's very identity as God's blessed people is at stake, just like ours is. We want to let the world know we're Christians. We got to make sure they see us as Christians, not just as another guy, you know, with a funny-looking beard. Talks funny, too, when his throat's not working too good. But the idea is the fact that we have to be distinguished, not just in how we look, but in our actions, in our words. We have to be God's blessed people here on this earth. When we fail those tests, is that a reflection on us? Yes, it is. But we fail to realize sometimes that's a reflection on God. Talk about Adam and Eve. Don't eat of the tree. They did. Was that a reflection on them? Yes, it was. Was that a reflection on the temptation of the devil? Yes, it was. Was that a reflection on God? Yes, it was. Because they failed to obey Him. One simple thing. One command not to eat of that tree. And they failed. And that's a reflection on God. You say, how is that a reflection on God? When we fail to live up to what God has said we should be, I call it, you know, we're a disappointment to Him. Let's just say it that way. Were the children of Israel disappointments to God at times? Very much so. Not every day, but generally pretty much every day. So when we leave, the lessons, you know, are not hard for us to understand. When we fail those tests, we forfeit everything God has won for us. We forfeit things like the salvation that Jesus has provided for us, the appeasement of God's wrath with the shedding of His blood, the purchase of the church with the shedding of His blood, the beauty of being able to meet in a congregation with fellow Christians. When we fail, we mess that up. We mess up that relationship. We talked about last week, I know we used this word, in Isaiah, your sin separates you from God. And any separation from God messes up your relationship with Him. And it messes up your relationship with your fellow brethren too. So there's a whole lot at stake here. A whole lot at stake. We cannot forget that God's people must represent Him to the world. And really, that's what, you know, God could have taken the children of Israel and blessed them and given them all these things in other places where they would have been able to be rich and have lands and cattle and fields and all that. He could have gone anywhere He wanted to. He could have taken them anywhere. But this is what He had promised them, because it was a good land. But wherever God would take them, that was going to be a good place, right? You would agree? Wherever God would take them. Think about us. Where's God taking us? Wherever God takes us, that's going to be a good place. We just got to make sure we follow Him. Got to make sure we let Him lead instead of us trying to take our own way. And that was part of the thing He's trying to teach the children of Israel. Again, we need to remember, thanks for all His blessings. And probably the most important thing, I think that we should know right now, before we go any further, we've got to teach these lessons to our children. Whether you have children, whether you're a Bible class teacher, whether you're grandchildren, whatever it is, we need to make sure they're learning the lessons that when we do wrong, there's punishment. When we do good, there's reward. The fact of what God has established in His law. The idea that children need to learn to obey God's commands. They must learn to not be influenced by the world. That's so hard. That's so hard for us as adults, isn't it? To not be influenced by the world. But that's what God wants His people to be. That's what God wanted the children of Israel to be. Not be influenced by these people who have all these idols and these graven images. But to let the world know who you are, that you are my people, and you're going to obey me because I am a great and glorious God. And we're going to look at some things that teach us that too here in this next lesson. Got a few more minutes. Let's go ahead. I don't know if you have your handout tonight. We're going to go ahead and look at a couple of questions. I want to, anyway. Starting there in chapter 6 and verse 10. First question I gave you was, what was God going to give Israel in the land of Canaan? I tried to give you a bunch of space in there. That's why the questions are two pages. So you could write all the things that He was going to give them. Anybody make that list or have that answered? Look over in, look in verse 10. Andre, would you just read that for us out loud? Go, yeah, read through the about at least till 12, I think it is.
And houses full of all good things which you did not fill, and cisterns which you did not dig, vineyards and olive trees which you did not plant, and you eat and are satisfied. Then watch yourself that you do not forget the Lord who brought you from the land of Egypt out of the house of slavery.
Okay. That was a pretty good list, wasn't it? He's going to give you everything and you don't have to do a thing. Basically, that's what he was doing for the children of Israel. Now, we think about it, the history of wandering in the wilderness. What did they complain about? Food and water, basically, right? That was they complained about it all a lot, okay? But God always provided for them. They still complained about it, but God still was going to provide for it. They just didn't trust him enough. Now you're telling them, I'm going to give you this, and you're not going to have to do a thing. You're going to have all these things. Now, they were going to have to do something, weren't they, really? What were they going to have to do? Follow him and follow his instructions. Remember those statutes, commands, treaties, testimonies? You've got to follow those. But you've got to teach them to your children, too. So those are some things. He's going to give you, like I say, you know, wells are dug. You don't have to dig a well. Vineyards are planted. Olive trees. Everything, houses, goods, everything you could want. You got them. You don't have to do a whole lot of work for them. This is a hard question for me. The next question says, what three attributes, of God does Moses remind Israel about here in these verses? I think it's 13 through 15. What are some of the attributes of God that he reveals to them? Jealous God, okay. Yeah, what else? What else? Go ahead, speak out. You see there and there that he is, I think he's with them. Attributes. God's with you. God is with you. That's an attribute. That's a good thing. He says, in their midst. I'm in their midst. Okay? And then one of the things is, he revealed about, God has anger, doesn't he? And what does Moses remind them of about God's anger? He can destroy them. Pure and simply, he can destroy them. So he's reminding them that God has, you know, God's there. He didn't want you to mess up. But he can destroy you if you do. So be careful. He's trying to make them cautious to know what God can do. Basically, he's trying to reveal to them the power of God. If they haven't got it yet, I don't understand. But Moses is continuing. You notice that's going to happen continually. We're going to see how that is important, that we understand what God can do for us. Question three, I had, how is Israel to keep the commandments, testimonies, and statutes that God has commanded? What was the key word there? In verse 17. That was the key word. Diligently. What does that mean? Okay, let's get down to the word study now. We got an English teacher in here. What does the word diligently mean? Yeah. Yeah, okay. Focus. Yeah. Because Yeah. Yeah, we need to focus on God versus on other things, other men. Even though they're great men, you know, Paul, as you say, or Peter as an example, or John, they were great apostles, and they've taught us a lot with the letters. But our focus has got to be on Jesus. Diligent, does it carry with it also some, like, focus in on the important thing, but it also considers steadfastness. In other words, you never give up. You keep doing. You find it. You look for it. You find it. You keep going because there's going to be more to find. It's like following Jesus. Where does it stop? Yeah, Regina, go ahead. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. I'm going to ask this fourth question. Why did Moses keep reminding Israel to teach their children? Why did he keep reminding them that?
So they can do what God tells them to do.
Yeah. It's part of that diligence, yeah. He wants them to, in other words, he wants to pass that diligence on to their children. But what does it say in verse 20? Chapter 6, it says, when thy son asketh thee in time to come, saying, what mean the testimonies and the statutes and the ordinances which Jehovah our God hath commanded you? Thou shalt say unto thy son, we were Pharaoh's bondmen in Egypt, and Jehovah brought us out of Egypt with a mighty hand. And Jehovah showed signs and wonders, great and sore, upon Egypt, upon Pharaoh, and upon all his house, before our eyes. And he brought us out from thence, that he might bring us in, to give us the land which he swore unto our fathers. And Jehovah commanded us to do all these statutes, to fear Jehovah our God for our good always, that he might preserve us alive as at this day. And it shall be righteousness unto us if we observe to do all this commandment before Jehovah our God as he hath commanded us. That's all our time. Again, thanks for your participation. And we'll continue this study from chapter 6 and verse 10 next week.